Welcome to the Sacred Body Podcast, where we explore the embodiment of belonging and the journey to get there. The topics we'll focus on primarily are food, birth, sex, and boundaries. And I'm your host, Stacey Ramsauer. Thank you for joining me again on the Sacred Body Podcast. Today is a very exciting, very special conversation with my friend and colleague, Davina Simmons. She is a birth doula and birth worker, birth keeper, I think is the title that really suits you. She has her master's degree in college counseling and is an all-around unbelievable, seemingly tireless advocate, activist, and all-around impressive woman. So I really am honored to have this conversation with you, excited to get to share you with whoever out there is listening, and honestly, a little selfishly, just excited to connect and get to chat with you, soak you up. Since I can't officially have you as my own doula, I'll soak you up in this way. So, Dav, I would love to hear, in your own words, you know, you primarily, you know, from the outside, primarily your work of service in the world and professionally is birth work. And you've worked in a lot of areas of birth work. You have extensive training. And I'm really curious to know how this... how this became your primary focus, because I know on your website you talk about just like being a kid who was always obsessed with birth, and it was kind of weird because rather than cartoons you'd rather watch like a birth story. And I, you know, there's something obviously just very deep and connected for you about being a witness for birth and a support for birth. But even with your work as a college counselor and kind of cultivating that skill and desire to be a support person, how did it become birth work specifically?
Thank you for asking me that. Well, in my work with college students, I did a lot of support work around crisis intervention.
Okay.
And wore a lot of different hats as a facilitator, as like a groundskeeper, as you want to say, or whatever. I did a lot of things. I basically kept these students alive. And as I kind of moved into that, I wasn't curious about any other jobs or paths. I really enjoyed what I was doing. I was living on the ground with students, and it was really amazing. And a good friend of mine who had been a mentor in college, for me personally, she had a baby. And I was asking her, tell me your birth story. I just want to hear it. And because that little part of me that always geeked out about birth came out, and it was, you know, someone who was really close to me. And as she was telling me her birth story, she paused and she looked at me and she said, you would be an incredible doula. And I was like, what the hell is a doula? What is that? And so I like went home and, you know, pulled up the internet and was like, I Googled doula, like what is a doula? And I started reading through the description of what a doula did and what makes a good doula, what kind of background should you have, and the stars just kind of started connecting and moving into being, and I was like, this is what I want to do. I want to do this. And so I had an informational interview with a doula in the community, and, you know, it was a really good conversation, a lot of good information and knowledge. And then I said, maybe it's not time yet. Maybe I should wait a couple years. I'm a little tired. I don't know if I want to do a training right now. I do a lot of emotional work with people, and I don't know if I have the capacity to sit and get certified. So I kind of put it on the shelf. And then a couple of years later, I moved. I was in the process of moving down to Northern California, and I would sit on planes and sit next to midwives and chat with people because I'm chatty. And so I would start talking to people and say, what do you do? I'm a midwife. And I was like, oh my God, much. Or I would, you know, I was in West Elm one day buying pillows and I needed to talk with the manager, and the manager came out and we started chatting, and she was like, yeah, I do doula work on the side. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's following me. It's following me. And then the final straw was I moved down to Berkeley, California for a job, and I was getting a massage, and because I was nursing an injury that I had, and I was getting a massage, and my massage therapist and I were talking about our lofty aspirations and life dreams, and I said I wanted to, you know, get certified to be a doula one day, and she said, oh, I signed up for this doula training and I can't go, you should take my spot. And so At that moment, I was just kind of floored, and my mouth dropped open, and I was just like, okay, I'll do it. And so I think I really believe that the universe, you know, conspires to meet you when you make a decision.
Yeah.
And I feel like the universe gave me some time, and then finally my time was up. And so I signed up for the training, I think, the next week, and then within 2.5 months, I was certified to be a doula. It was very quick. It was very fast and easy, and all of the things aligned for me to be able to do it. And so it just kind of, that's how I moved into it and started the wheels going. So
what was that transition like for you to go from, you know, certainly emotionally laborious work and being in the trenches, so to speak, with people? That's what it sounds like, you know, the kind of work you were doing already. And of course it's different with birth and working with like young college students. However, there's an intensity to it, but in particular, the life of being on call and the life of, you know, up for days at a time sometimes. What I observe of you, you do a very good job of managing your time and making sure you get respite, but there's also like, you can't control the babies, and the babies are sometimes little jerks, and they all come. So what was that transition like for you?
Oh, it's so funny you ask that specific question, because in my work with college students, I was on call. So I lived in the residential community, and I was kind of a first responder. And so, but with that on call, it was, to have someone who is going through suicidal ideation. So I never knew what was going to happen when the phone rang. And so moving into doula work, it was a slow transition. So I took a free birth, then I took another birth and charged very little, and I was still working full time in higher ed. And then in between those two births, my mom passed away, and when she passed away, I went on medical leave. So I took medical leave from the job that I was in, which in that process, I had actually moved out of higher ed and worked in property management for a short while. And so I was also on call and putting out fires left and right all the time. And that job ended up not being very healthy for me. There was a lot, that environment was pretty toxic, just in terms of being a woman of color navigating a job that was run by really harmful people. And so I, after my mom died, my doctor immediately put me on medical leave because of some trauma that I had experienced and kind of watching her die. When I was on medical leave, I was like, I'm done. I'm done working for other people. I'm done working in jobs that really take a lot from me and don't give me anything. And so then someone reached out to me and asked if I was free and available to do a birth. And I was like, yeah, I'm free. I'm on medical leave. I'm free as a bird. So I took that birth, and then that was all it really took for me to say, it's time to jump into this full time. Like, this is going to be important work for me while I'm grieving the loss of my mother. And it's going to be really important for me to be able to grieve in my own way, in my own time, in a structure that I make and I create. And so again, the universe conspired, and I started getting clients, and I had another opportunity to work with a friend on a project that was, you know, paying me some. And so I was able to parse together the financial stability too, because that's, you know, a huge risk, like, you know, being a full-time doula. So, but what I wasn't anticipating was the impact that doula work would have on my relationships, my friendships, my partnership. And that I didn't start to understand until I was pretty deep in. So I jumped into doula work full time April of 2018. And from April to about August, everything was just like active. I was busy, I was booked, going to births, learning a lot, connecting with people, networking a ton. And then I started to realize, oh, I'm on call in a different way. Like, I'm on call all the time versus on call for like 3 or 4 days out of the month or a week out of the month. I'm on call for a long time. And so I think I had to learn how to adjust. And you mentioned this, how I take time for respite. It really came because my partner and I had a lot of conversations about how busy I was. And I run on busy. I love being busy. And my partner is the complete opposite. He is very, he's roots and I'm wings. So he's very, he loves being home. He loves being with his people. He loves spending quality time. And I'm like, let's do this. I'm busy. I'll see you later. So we had a lot of conversations about that and the impact that it was having. And I think it's still something that I'm learning how to manage. But that transition, you know, was not bumpy, but it wasn't smooth. It was full. And I think the other piece was just the emotional transition into this work. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, what do I do when I leave a birth and I feel really high and I feel like I can't sleep and I can't eat, but I'm exhausted. And like, what do I do with that? And so I had to start integrating a lot of loving touch, so a lot of massage, a lot of acupuncture, like different things to keep me level and keep me stable, because I was noticing the impact that it had on my adrenals, just on my adrenals, on my bones, my muscles. Like, so I really needed to have some good touch on my body. And then just continuing, I was already in therapy, so continuing mental health therapy and processing births as I needed to, but yeah, just recognizing how much space I needed to make while I was holding space for others was a part of that.
Thank you for being a birth worker, a care provider who takes care of themselves.
Yeah.
And what I also really value, like, I think that it's essential to have people who understand the nature of the work that you do. So in this case, other birth workers, because really there's nothing like it. There's nothing that compares.
Yeah.
And some of us are lucky enough to have a partner who's interested, or at least interested enough to like be present while we talk about it and talk through some things. But I think that, you know, even like the next level of care, that further circle out from your immediate life, like a professional, like a therapist, like a massage therapist, recognizing the depth of this, and you acknowledge this all the time, and it's something that I want to talk about. Being a woman of color in particular, this work will crack into you, into your bones, into your blood memory, into your inherited trauma. And as a woman of color, that's a very acute and present trauma. I think it is collective and it's very specific. So your acknowledgement of doing this work for your people, whenever you share a post and that's explicitly stated, it moves me to tears. And I would love to hear when that became something very, very conscious for you, something kind of emergent for you. I'm going to safely assume it's always been a part of your MO. And birth is pretty specific. So please share with us that part of your story.
Oh, so I think it really was born out of it started in my doula training. I was trained by two women, wife and a daughter. So they trained us.
Can you repeat that, Dav? It cut out a little bit.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah. So I was trained by two women. One is a mother who was a midwife, and then her daughter was a doula.
Okay.
And so they trained us. And I even in my reading around birth, in the reading assignments we had to do, I was like, there are only white people in this book. There are only white people on the cover of this book. This is talking about a baby who's pinking up, but what about a darker baby? So all of these little nuances were starting to show themselves to me, and I was like, what is birth work? And this was after spending time in higher ed and doing a lot of work to make space for students on the margins in higher ed for retention. And so they were, my people and people on the margins are always on my mind in every space I inhabit. And so in birth work, in my training, I started to realize like, okay, the birth world is really white. I started to recognize even the midwifery movement, you know, and how the granny midwives were basically kind of erased from time. And then this resurgence of the white feminism midwifery movement came to be, and who they are here to serve,
right,
and who they don't know how to serve well. I also live in the Pacific Northwest. I live in Seattle, and this is a very white place. But the birth community in Seattle is huge. It is massive. But the majority of our midwives here are white. And there is also a generational difference here. So you've got these younger white midwives coming through, and then you've got some midwives of color who are starting to trickle in. And then you've got older midwives who are white. And so there's a dynamic here. And it is a very tender and tenuous dynamic. I wish there was a third T word I could use. but maybe tiresome is the word. But there is a very fine line between, I think, let's be professional and not offend people versus, no, let's talk about how you caused harm to this doula or to this student midwife or to this person that you, who is under your care, or this client or this patient. Let's talk about how you caused harm. Or, you know, how I think some midwives and communities are causing harm by not doing their own work, by not doing their personal work.
Yeah.
So I started to realize that in my training. And then, you know, a lot of the clients that I serve in Seattle are white. We have a very affluent population here in Seattle. And so a lot of my clients are white, upper middle class, you know, work in tech. So it's a very, it's kind of homogenous. And so I was trying to figure out how to connect with my community in this work, while also making this sustainable and being able to continue to live on an income. And that's not to say that folks in my community can't afford it, but I think that there is a disparity and there is a gap here.
Yeah.
And so I realized that, you know, the way that someone is born into this world creates the story for the rest of their life. And the way that someone experiences their birth, the way that a birthing person experiences their birth, creates the story for how they parent for the rest of their life. And to me, it's very important and it's critical that these folks are cared for well and that they're looked at as a whole person. And you have this old research that's done on birthing people, and you think about the subjects who were the people of the research, and they're white.
Yeah.
And so we're putting these, we're writing these texts and these books, but they're for white people and about white people. And so I think I was just kind of like, the narrative has to shift here. And then you had, you know, last year, this explosive movement of maternal morbidity and black women dying, and this awakening almost. And I don't want to say it was like that, then the door opened and this information was out, because the information was always there. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just gotten louder and it's gotten a voice at the table. So in my practice, one of the things that I do is 10% of all profit that I receive goes into a reserve and gives me the ability to give a low cost to no cost birth to someone on the margins. And I save that specifically for that. But I also recognize that I have to balance giving and make sure that I'm not giving out too much of myself, and that I'm sustaining myself, because I think anyone who is a doula is a nurturer. Mm-hmm. by you know, just design. And nurturers want to help and want to care for everybody. Anybody who comes to them, they're like, I want to be your doula, or I want you to be my client. And so part of doing this work for my people has been saying no when I have to say no, when I'm too full or when I'm too stretched. And so I actually am a part of something called Open Arms. It's a nonprofit organization out of Seattle that provides free doula support for folks under the poverty line. But the doulas are still able to be compensated. And so it's at no cost to the client, but the doulas receive some type of compensation. And this was a way for me to really get my foot in the community, because the community is really hard to reach if you don't know where to begin, if you're not from Seattle, which I'm not. And so I was trying to find my community and trying to find those affinity groups to be able to offer my services in it. Open Arms really helped. That's definitely one way that I am working to serve my community. And then the other way is I put on workshops every quarter. And one of the workshops that I do is, it's called Centering the Marginalized Experience. And it's about helping people who are in healing professions and in the wellness community understand the dynamics and the broken system of the wellness community, and how those on the fringes are often not served well, and how so much of it is because people aren't doing their own personal work, and it impacts the way that they do their professional work. And so we talk a lot about why folks on the margins are not receiving appropriate care, and what the barriers are to that. But we also talk about kind of, we dive into shadow work. We talk about shadow work. We dive into kind of the gross parts of the wellness community. So a lot of the spiritualization and the spiritual bypassing and the light washing. And we talk about all of that and really break down how you can't do this work until you know how to be in this world. Mm-hmm. You can't do until you be, like, until you are. And so there's, and we talk about this, and people come in thinking, she's going to teach me how to be a better healer or be a better wellness provider. And they leave saying, now I have all these questions about who I am. And now I have all these questions about what has informed me and my bias and my unconscious bias and conscious bias in the world, and how this impacts the work that I do. So that's another way that I am committing to my community, is by really taking in folks who are, you know, of the majority, who have privilege, and sitting them down in a workshop and really breaking some shit down with them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, does that answer your question?
Yeah, and beyond. Okay. I mean, and a huge piece of our shared story, Davina and I attended a postpartum care training together, and I mean, I think it's safe to say for both of us, cracked open, rocked our world, and shared a lot. And I feel confident saying you really rocked my world in the arena of the conversation around the marginalized experience and people of color. And I think I'm a perfect example of someone who has a lot of information, has a lot of access to information, and let me be specific, a white person who, you know, has enjoyed all the fruits of that my whole life. And there is this awkwardness that you called out in the midst of that space. It's like, it's uncomfortable to talk about it, so we don't talk about it, or we just name it and we move on. And I mean, that's, I still feel myself a little bit in that space. Like, I don't know how to talk about it well, so it just feels easier to not talk about it. But you said something so crucial that has reverberated and really created some ripples for me and led to a big breakthrough later, which I'll specify. But as you were talking about it to the group, and you have this unbelievable ability to be ferocious and angry and totally kind at the same time, which is like bizarre. I don't know how you do it, but I love it. I love that about you. And I was like, oh, fuck. But you said, and I wrote it down, it's not your Black friend's responsibility to educate you about why this is a problem, so don't ask them to. And I was like floored by this, and it, you know, it stuck with me, but I didn't know what it meant really. Like, there was still a lot of resistance for me to getting that. And then I think it was only a month after that training, we all experienced the Kavanaugh hearings. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, suddenly my experience was real. And my experience reflected your experience. And I saw something really beautiful shared on social media. It's privilege is thinking something isn't a problem because it's not your problem.
Right.
And I was like, oh, like it all came together in this tidal wave of humility and tenderness and real gratitude for you and these workshops that you lead and the voice that you are and this unbelievable capacity to be ferocious and angry and kind. And I just want to like hold that for a moment as something that I wish every white person had access to. And also there's this point of like, we run out of excuses, right? Like we're running out of excuses to not do this, to not do this work, to not look at it, to not just like sit down and shut up. So I just want to thank you for the leader that you are, because I do feel, and maybe this is, I don't know, please feel free to correct me on this, but I feel like you're speaking to everyone as a representative and as a leader for the Black community and marginalized communities. You speak to everyone, and there is a desire to be inclusive. But there, I don't know, there's just something about the way that you lead and teach that is so rare. Like, it's so rare and beautiful. And so I want everyone to be able to take your workshop. When are you going to offer it online?
I'll get there someday.
Okay.
There is one thing I want to say. I think I don't want to be seen as someone who is speaking on behalf of the Black community. My experience is my experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have privilege even in my own self. I have a master's degree. I didn't grow up in poverty. I grew up with a single mom, but she was a damn good one. And so I don't, there are parts of different experiences that I don't touch that I can't speak to and I can't speak for. And so I'm only speaking on the behalf of myself and my own experience as someone on the margins, but I don't look at myself as someone who can speak on behalf of a community of people. And I think that's where sometimes there's a little bit of danger in our thinking of putting someone on a pedestal as the mouthpiece of their community, because even in my own experience, I'm limited, you know? Even in my own experience, I'm not fluent. I don't believe in the words culturally competent, but I am not that. I only have the lens that in which I view the world and how I navigate the world. And so I'm using the access that I have. I'm using the privilege that I have. I'm using that to kind of elevate those who don't have a seat at the table yet in my community, because I'm trying to figure out, like, if there's no one who can speak for the entire Black experience, because that is so
complex,
nuanced,
yeah,
as is any person's experience in general.
Yeah.
But I do just want to say, I don't look at myself as someone who is speaking on behalf of a community. I'm only speaking on behalf of myself and the life that I've lived, the path I've walked. But I am deeply, deeply grateful and honored to do it. I'm deeply honored to speak on behalf of those who don't have a voice at the table. That is who I'm speaking for. And I think that I am also speaking for those outside of my own community, outside of identities that I know, because I don't know the half of their experience. I only know mine.
It's a moment in time where I think it's rare because of the tremendous reach we all have access to through social media to allow for the real need to have this one-to-one or, you know, closer ratio work when it comes to these sticky conversations. And like, sticky, of course, is such a tongue-in-cheek word to use, but thank you for just acknowledging the humanity that we're speaking to.
Sure.
It's a human thing. You're a human being with a particular calling and gift. And I sort of feel like social media culture enables some of this, like, I am now representing an entire whatever. And it's like, well, no one does. That's the thing. Each individual being has integrity and rights and needs and a particular gift. And we all deserve to be heard.
Yeah. I think we're also in a world now where slowly but surely folks on the margins are gaining access to white spaces, and so oftentimes they are seen as the mouthpiece to their community because they're the only ones in the room to speak to it.
Yeah.
And so they're automatically put in these positions, these unfair positions, as the expert, and you have this experience but no one else in the room does, can you speak to that? Like, what are your people feeling, you know, or what are your people experiencing? And it's like, well, first of all, my people, I'm just talking from my own experience.
Yeah.
And I believe that that is the best way to navigate that, because it can be very dangerous when you assume, you know, this position as the expert on your community, because the community is nuanced. But yeah.
Thank you for that clarification.
Yeah.
That's
for sure. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm a little bit blown back right now. Not like I didn't expect to be, but I want to know a little bit more about, like, when I first saw you beginning to share about this workshop that you lead, Centering the Marginalized Experience, there's a fuller title to this that I saw in your flyers, Maintaining an Authentic Practice. And curious about your... just the creation of this title and creating the context with those words in particular, because I find it pretty fascinating, and I know you're a little tricksy one over there, so there's like subtle meaning in there, and there's also these words that mean a general thing to most people. But, you know, how do we maintain an authentic practice as healers, as people who... I believe, even if it's just the smaller part of their motivation, really desire to be of service to something larger and are on their own healing path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I first want to say part of that title was actually not created by me. So
okay.
I went to, this is another like universe story, I went to a winter solstice event, I know, I went to a winter solstice event at an apothecary last December, and in this workshop, it was beautiful, it was beautifully done, and really healing and really restorative for me, and the owner and I kind of like locked eyes at one point in the evening, and then we chatted after it was all done, and we both looked at each other and were just like, I enjoy you. And, you know, like the feeling is mutual, and said we wanted to work together and collaborate someday. And then about a month later, she emailed me and said, hey, you know, I'm looking for a facilitator for a workshop on centering the marginalized experience. Mm-hmm. And in the wellness community, because she teaches a year-long class for wellness practitioners and who do earth medicine, whatever that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, the content can be created by you, whatever you want. I just need someone to teach a class on this, because at my commitment to decentering whiteness in the wellness community is pointing me in this direction, and it's going to be a requirement and an elective for students. So I said, okay. And I have facilitation experience, I have training experience, but I've never done something like this before, and it just felt right. And so as I was playing around with the title and like doing some research and thinking about our training that we did in New Mexico with Innate, the word authenticity kept coming up, and there was something in the training, in our workbook from our training, that talked about being in your authenticity as a practitioner. And so that is how the whole title kind of evolved and came to be. But I think what it means to be an authentic practitioner is first and foremost understanding who taught you, and where this knowledge came from, because we have come to a place in time where people are beginning to reclaim what was originally theirs, mm-hmm. what was originally their cultures, what originally belonged to them. We are starting to understand how we have commercialized healing practices. We have whitewashed healing practices, and you know, I think what we have to first understand is who taught who this, and where was this information taken from, stolen from, borrowed from, or given to. And so I think the first step of being an authentic practitioner is understanding who trained you and where did they get that information from, and how are you revering your teachers, and how are you giving credit to your teachers? Mm. And that's something I talk a lot about in the workshop, is the information that you are using stolen? And if it is, how do you rectify the use that your use of it? And do you go and find someone who can teach this to you, who you can compensate, and who that was taken from, their community it was taken from? So how do you repair the harm done there with the information that you have, depending on who taught you? And I really encourage my workshop participants to name their teachers on their websites, to honor their teachers on their websites, because I think that that first pays reverence and homage to who has come before you and who has given you information, but it also is a way to keep the ties strong. So I think that's one of the first ways of engaging in authentic practice. And then the second is having complete knowledge of self, having complete knowledge of our shadow sides, of the parts of us that we keep in the attic that are locked away, but that will come out if you're in a room with a client and they hit a certain button and you don't even know where your reaction came from. And now something is damaged, and now a person is damaged. And one of the things that our instructor said to us at the training that we went to was that the stronger vibration always impacts the weaker vibration. Mm. And so as a wellness practitioner and as a healer, you are automatically the stronger vibration, because someone is coming to you to be healed. Someone is coming to you to have care given and to be caretaken for. So just taking responsibility for the position that you will be in when you're sitting with a client, and understanding your own shortcomings, your bias, your unconscious bias, and doing something with that, being responsible with that. So I really believe that that is, you know, where an authentic practice comes from, is having an idea of who your authentic self is. And a part of that is understanding the shadow work and the shadow sides of ourselves. And again, these are a lot of things that we talk about in the workshop.
And you just speak to it so clearly. It's so clearly embedded in just the fiber of your being. It's, and when we're on, my teacher would call it a dharmic path. Like, this is work that is also an access point for your individual healing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it just happens like this. We can just talk about it, we can just share. And I do believe there's something that I say a lot, I've shared this a lot in several conversations in the podcast already. One of my favorite concepts is from a yoga and Ayurveda teacher named David Frawley, and he talks about the yoga practitioner as Agni. Agni is the transformational fire. It's something on a gross level, like your physical digestion. It is also the esoteric transformational fire of waking up. And when you embody your path, when you are doing the work of your soul's healing, you become just, you know, by virtue of putting words down on a piece of paper, holding space, giving people a time and a place to come and gather and listen, you become that catalyst for the ripple of change, and you make it available in such a way. And I'm saying this specifically to you, Dav, not having sat in these circles with you, my experience of being in circle with you is you allow for the real authenticity, which is for each person to take what is true, what is honest, what is whole for them, and to make it useful, to let it shine. It's so beautiful. It's so awesome to watch you. I get the privilege of seeing your face as you talk about this, and it's so beautiful. It's so moving and energizing. And I am curious about this. You know, I know we already spoke to the kind of self-care that care work necessitates. And in your work of navigating these uncomfortable truths about the way systems work, medical system, wellness industry, higher education, what are the primary resources in your life? Like, what reminds you of your why and anchors you to your body in a way that feels safe?
First and foremost, I think my mother's life story. My mother and I were very close, and her life story touches all of these places. And I had the privilege of knowing my mother, not only as my mother, but knowing her as a person. And as I grew into my womanhood, she began to peel back layers of herself and share with me, especially when it was like really applicable to my life and what I was going through. She was able to not take those moments as like, I'm gonna lecture you as your mother, but I'm gonna share part of my story with you so you understand like why you're gonna be okay, or why you should be careful. And so I think that her story really allowed me to, and I still do, like I find my source there. I find my resource there is honoring a life lived, honoring her life. And second, I think what a resource for me is probably my community, my friends, my family, and my partner. They all offer me respite. I love that you said that word earlier, but they offer me that, and they, whether it's being in the arms of my partner after a birth and, you know, crying with him and making love to him, or being held by him, there's healing where he is for me. And he's such a strong, grounded presence, and he is always telling me how he believes in the work that I do and how important I am to this work. And so I think that he has just been such a main character in my life for the last few years. And then my community of friends, they get it. They get the on-call life. They get that I'm not always available and that it's a game of catch me if you can with them. And they're so patient and so supportive, and they check in. And then I think, you know, truthfully, Stacey, the babies. It's the babies. The babies are, to see a baby, to see an infant take its first breath, to see a child land on the chest of the birthing person, their habitat, like that is their habitat. To see that circular, the baby coming out and going onto a chest, or the baby coming out and going to a warmer, and I'm telling the birth partner to the warmer and tell your baby to breathe and tell your baby happy birthday and tell your baby welcome to the world. To see like the first points of connection for an infant is something that I witnessed miracles. I witness really miraculous things happen. And then I go to a coffee shop that morning as I'm like dragging myself home, and someone's like, how's your morning? And I'm like, well, if I told you, you wouldn't believe me. So just, you know, I think the babies are a constant reminder of the type of future that we have to craft for them.
Yeah.
And they are our biggest teachers. Their needs are so simple. And they ask us to slow down, to work out our shit, and to not make it about us because it's about them. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it's a simple ask, but we complicate things. And so Yeah, I think the babies are also a resource, because to work with people, you know, in their second and third trimesters of pregnancy, and then see these little creatures be born, I'm like, oh, it was you all along in there.
Totally.
Oh, I knew it was you all along in there, and now it's you. And so it is wild. It's wild, it's mysterious, and it is medicine. It's such good medicine. So I think, you know, those are my resources. And at a basic level, truthfully, like my main resources are the water that I ingest all the time, the snuggles from my dog, and the greetings I get from my dog when I come home, and he's just like, where have you been? I missed you. And, you know, a phone call from my partner, or a bath, a warm bath, or, you know, every now and then a nice joint, like all of those things that, that help to ground me and anchor me. I would say those are my resources. So,
have you always been so connected to your pleasure? I mean, hearing you speak, it's like, Dav, give me lessons. Like, you are so clear on what brings you pleasure and comfort, and express such gratitude, and are so willing to receive that. And that in and of itself is like a whole year long course. Like, this is unbelievable stuff. And I do want to say, just as a quick interjection, I'll never, ever, ever forget in my entire life every single detail about the first birth that I witnessed. Yeah. And it is something that I wish every human being could see, would see, because we would radically transform the way that we live and operate on this planet. If we were able to bear witness to that, even if it's not, like, even the scary births, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. Tell us, please, your witchy ways for being like so in your body and so connected to your purpose, and valuing replenishing yourself. You have a tremendous gift. And you also replenish it and revere it and restore it. And that is like, mwah.
It hasn't always been this way. Like, it took a lot of work and a lot of intention and a lot of ancestral work, actually. Like, doing some ancestral work and healing with the great Rachel Weiss in Colorado. And tapping into the mother wound that was present in my family, and how the mothers in my family, on both my paternal and my maternal lineage, were women who fell on swords for their families, and there was nothing left for them at the end of the day. And I refuse to let that be the story that continues in my own life as I venture towards eventually becoming a mother, if that's in my story. And so recognizing I needed to figure out what it was that made me feel alive, and what are the little things that, if you have nothing else in this world, if you have absolutely nothing, what makes you feel alive? And that to me was, you know, nourishing food and human touch and connection. And so I think that it took me a long time to heal my relationship with my body and the way I felt in my body as a Black woman. And also as a woman who has never been, you know, what people look like in magazines, and who never will. And also having a partner who I feel so safe with. Like, I feel, and sex with my partner is like, there's no amount of like it being in my head. I'm never in my head. And it's always like, I get to laugh with you, I can make jokes with you, and I get to play. And so I think even that healing from growing up in a Christian, you know, with a Christian background, and eventually divorcing myself from the Christian faith and understanding how that really can fuck your shit up.
Yeah.
You know?
We are officially in the explicit designation for this podcast.
Yes, we are.
Drop all the F-bombs you want from here on out.
Understanding the impact, understanding even that had on me. And then, you know, the ancestral stuff, it was work.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think the other place that I found and tapped into my ability to replenish is, you know, living in the Pacific Northwest, this is lush land. Like this is mm-hmm. land that is soft and lush and inviting. And it's almost like it mirrors the people in the Pacific Northwest, because sometimes it's really hard to break in and like find your people. And the land is the same way. You walk on this land and you see the softness of it, but it doesn't quite let you feel it until you take a moment and you honor it. And then it just like melts you in and it receives you.
Wow.
And that's very much the same way that the people are here. But I think living on Duwamish land and in Duwamish territory, this is a place that is just rich. And so I think even the land, walking into the forest, walking into the parks here, and the water and the moss and the sounds and the smells, it's hard not to feel connected to yourself mm-hmm. in this place. Yeah.
It's so true. My experience of land that is connected to where you are is on Salt Spring Island, the Coast Salish land territories. And my God, it was like that land invited some of the biggest emotional breakthroughs of my life. And it's so crucial. I mean, this is a piece that I think is so often overlooked, and I've had this specific conversation more than once with my teachers, and this conversation with Rochelle of Innate Traditions. Like, if you are going to be a caregiver of any kind, your holding environment will dictate the degree to which you can provide care and the quality of care you give and your ability to recharge. And so I just really honor you sharing the process that it has been to come to a place of full honoring, recognition, and receptivity for your needs to get met, because I'm so grateful you're in the world giving and sharing. And, you know, we can only continue that when we're full up. And also thank you for naming the role of touch and holding. And of course, we each have our own toolbox, we each have our own needs, but just as someone who identifies with that as well, and the aspect of sexuality that informs my work, to have a safe place with a partner where we can be fully in our body at that, you know, to me, sexuality, it's almost like this is the place that's closest to when I was born. It's pure sensation. Yeah. There's no, the veil is stripped, like wide open. Mm-hmm. And it's just about feeling and need and desire and wow. Like what a gift and what a way to radically heal.
Yeah.
What a potential way, of course. Gosh, I wish I could just keep you and put you in my back pocket and pull you out multiple times throughout the day. But Dav, I want to close our time to honor your schedule and keep our listeners hungry for more. I would love to have you back on to go into, you know, any number of things, but your voice is really special. I treasure it. I'm grateful to know you. And thank you so much for your time today.
Yes, thank you.
Where can people find you? People who are interested in learning from you, and perhaps I do have some folks up in the Pacific Northwest, but hopefully this just gets spread far and wide. So where do people go to find you and your services?
So you can find me on Instagram at Rooted Birth Doula. And then my website is www.bornrooted.com.
And I'll put those specific letters in the show notes in the podcast. Okay. Thank you, Dav. Have a wonderful evening. You're a gift.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of the Sacred Body Podcast. I look forward to joining you again. And if you want to learn more about today's episode, please visit stacyramsauer.com. You can leave your comments, share far and wide, and we'll see you next time.